the greatest ethical statement the world has ever seen, and Jesus' sermon closing to his disciples, are contained in Matthew chapter 7, the final chapter of the Sermon on the Mount. We've been coursing through the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7, and not only do we come to the last chapter today, but we come to the last segment of the entire Himalayas of the New Testament podcast season. And what a place to end it. Hello, everybody. I'm Cecil Taylor with Cecil Taylor Ministries and CecilTaylorMinistries.com. This is the third podcast episode regarding the Sermon on the Mount, The Mountain with Three Peaks. For this third peak, Chapter 7, as always, you could see the entire chapter as a peak, but I've selected the very top of the top for this podcast, so I'll be sharing the Golden Rule and the Parable of the Wise and Foolish Builders. In both cases, there are nuances of interpretation that make for some interesting discussion, so I hope you'll feel stimulated and enlightened when you finish this podcast. Let's start with the verse that's been called the Golden Rule. Matthew 7, verse 12. Jesus said, "So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets." This has been called the greatest ethical statement of all time, even called the Everest of ethics, which certainly fits our Himalayan theme, although we'll see some still assail it. But let's start with the genius of Jesus in his communication and his teaching. Jesus taught in many ways. His parables show how he understood his audience, so he took complex or nebulous ideas and placed them into the audience's context. Often, he used agricultural metaphors. He portrayed family or cultural interactions that they were familiar with, yet we can usually still relate to today. Jesus posed questions as well as giving answers. Even his parables and sayings can be a bit open-ended, so that we have to fill in the blank. Sometimes the answer is obvious, but sometimes the answer is nebulous or requires deeper thought. Jesus was also the master of summation. When asked for the greatest commandment in the law, he selected a 1A and a 1B, love God and love neighbor. Jesus had a second summation for the law and the prophets, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We must widen our view to understand a significant aspect of the golden rule, its positive nature, do, act, as you would have others do and act. Listen now for the difference as we discuss how this topic has been treated by other religions than Christianity. A Jewish teacher, Hillel, preceded Jesus by a few years. His famous ethical statement was, "That which is hateful to you, do not do unto your fellow. That is the whole Torah. The rest is the explanation. Go and learn." I kind of like that, but it's still stated in the negative, "That which is hateful to you, do not do." Who knows, maybe Jesus' version was a response to Hillel, who was just briefly before him. Other Jewish teachings, such as in the book of Tobit, have the same negative connotation of don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. Now Confucius, who predated Jesus by 500 years, said, "What you do not want done to yourself, do not do to others." Very similar. From Hinduism comes the phrase, "Do not to others what ye do not wish done to yourself." How about in Greek culture? King Nicocles is quoted as saying, "Do not do to others the things which make you angry when you experience them at the hands of other people." The Stoic maxim was, "What you do not wish to be done to you, do not do to anyone else." A Buddhist text from the 6th century BC reads, "Hurt not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful." But a Buddhist hymn doesn't fall far from the golden rule. The lyrics include, "Putting oneself in the place of others, kill not, nor cause to kill. Doing as one would be done by, kill not, nor cause to kill." But no one went as far as going from do not to do, from a negative goodness to a positive goodness. One of the things Jesus does throughout the Sermon on the Mount is to reframe the Ten Commandments, 8 of which are stated in the negative. Do not kill, do not steal, do not commit adultery, do not covet your neighbor's wife, possessions, etc. But Jesus says things like, "You have heard it said, do not kill, but I tell you, dot, dot, dot. Or you have heard it said, do not commit adultery, but I tell you. And in each case, Jesus amplifies on the commandment, taking it to a higher level, building upon the law and the prophets to a greater ethical standard. And such is the golden rule, do unto others. In other words, take positive action. Here's what one of my favorite authors, William Barclay, had to say about this negative versus positive tension between the golden rule and other commandments. He writes, it is perfectly possible for a man of the world to observe the negative form of the golden rule. He could, without very serious difficulty, so discipline his life that he would not do to others what he did not wish them to do to him. But the only man who can even begin to satisfy the positive form of the rule is the man who has the love of Christ within his heart. He will try to forgive as he would wish to be forgiven, to help as he would wish to be helped, to praise as he would wish to be praised, to understand as he would wish to be understood. He will never seek to avoid doing things. He will always look for things to do. Clearly, this will make life much more complicated. Clearly, he will have much less time to spend on his own desires and his own activities, for time and time again, he will have to stop what he is doing to help someone else. It will be a principle which will dominate his life at home, in the factory, in the bus, in the office, in the street, in the train, at his games, everywhere. He can never do it until self withers and dies within his heart. To obey this commandment, a man must become a new man with a new center to his life. And if the world was composed of people who sought to obey this rule, it would be a new world. Very beautiful, and very clearly stating the difference between this negative goodness of the Ten Commandments, which is don't do, and the negative goodness of others that we quoted earlier, but the positive goodness that Jesus asks us to perform. Now, in my list of other commandments that fall short, there is one challenger I haven't mentioned. It is known as the categorical imperative by Immanuel Kant. The classic form of it is, act only according to that maxim whereby you can at the same time will that it should become a universal law. So that's a mouthful, a little complicated. So let me use another way the categorical imperative has been phrased. Act as you would want all other people to act towards all other people. Now, that may sound good, but I see a flaw in this from the point of view of ethics. It sounds like a rational way to define you should act based on how you want the world to work. But consider, if your view is that everyone should just leave everyone else alone, which actually some people do believe, and I can name you a few, then you would never do anything to help another person. So I don't see the point in the categorical imperative. I don't see it as an improvement. But champions of the categorical imperative see loopholes in what Jesus said. Here are two. The masochist example. With the golden rule, a masochist or a sadist would be justified in causing or receiving pain since that is what they want done to them. And then there's the first date example, where a young man, naive in the world, goes on a first date, finds himself alone with a woman, and tries to do things to her that he would do to himself. Now, I find these to be weak loopholes that only examine part of the golden rule. By saying the rule is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, yes, it's probably possible to come up with scenarios that make it sound more fragile. And by the way, those same two loopholes I just mentioned also apply to the categorical imperative itself. The problem with this challenge to the golden rule is that Jesus said more in the verse. Let's read the verse, Matthew 7:12, again. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. You see, you can't stop with the first part, the simple part. Jesus is speaking in the context of a whole body of commandments and law, an entire framework. So these silly examples of masochism and errant young men don't fit into that framework as acceptable behavior. Jesus isn't only making a statement for rational theoretical discussion. He is supporting an entire ethical system and summing it up in a way that turns us to positive goodness and away from negative goodness. For example, many people go through life saying, I don't kill, I don't steal, I don't commit adultery, therefore I'm good. Yes, but, what did you actually do to help anyone else in the world? As Barclay wrote, the golden rule compels us to take positive action. Let me take a break now. If you haven't heard, or even if you have, I'm delighted to announce that my first book, The Next Thing, A Christian Model for Dealing with Crisis in Personal Life, has won the Living Water Award from the Blue Lake Christian Writers Conference as runner-up in nonfiction. I'm honored to receive such an award for my very first book. To celebrate and to introduce my second book, Live Like You're Loved, I'm throwing a book party. Actually, there will be an in-person party on May 20th in Plano, Texas, and an online party on May 21st on my Facebook page. You can find more details from my website, CecilTaylorMinistries.com. The info about the party, both parties actually, is right there on the homepage up high, and from my Cecil Taylor Ministries Facebook page. Please attend if possible. You're invited. It would be great to see you, whether in person or online. And even if I don't know you personally, perhaps especially if I don't know you personally, I would appreciate seeing you. Now let's turn to Matthew 7:24-27 and the parable of the wise and foolish builders that concludes the Sermon on the Mount. It's key to note that this indeed is the conclusion. So Jesus is doing what we call in marketing a call to action. Here is from the verses. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. This is indeed a famous passage. Children's songs have been based on it. Even if someone doesn't know the Bible, they might know the basics of this passage. In this parable, Jesus wants us to do two things: hear him, and then do what he says. The root word in Latin for obedience is obedire, which literally means listen to, but is used to mean pay attention to. Jesus wants us to pay attention to him and then obey, put his words into practice. Now, it's not a light thing to ask us to actually do what Jesus says. These days, we go to church, we nod our heads at the sermon, and we go out and do what we've always done. This is human nature, but Jesus is serious in wanting us to change our lives. So serious, in fact, his teachings come with a warning. If we follow his ways, we'll be building on solid ground. If we don't, we'll lead flimsy lives, building on sand, never finding anything that truly sticks and gives us the right foundation of support. There's another aspect of being the foolish builder that I want to emphasize. Jesus says that you're foolish if you hear, but do not take the right action. It's like going to a class and being taught, but forgetting the lesson or losing the notes when you leave. Or it's like your father teaching you right from wrong and warning about the consequences, but then you do your own thing in a headstrong way and suffer those consequences. In both cases, with the wise and the foolish builders, they both will be challenged by the harsh circumstances of life. The rain is going to fall, the rivers are going to swell, the wind is coming to beat on your house, whether you're wise or foolish, because such things come to everyone. But how will this house you have built react to those circumstances? If we are grounded in God's kingdom, then we will be able to survive the looming challenges. I want to turn to a companion piece of scripture in Luke's Sermon on the Plain from Luke 6:46-49. It seems like the same message, but there are a couple of twists to note. Here it is. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They are like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When a flood came, the torrent struck that house but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete. A couple of differences. First, You hear Jesus' frustration more clearly at people who come to him but don't follow his teachings. Jesus has a great question for all of us. Why do you call him Lord but don't do what he says? Lord means master. But if he is truly in charge of your life, but you don't do what he says, can you truly claim to be his disciple? I believe that is a life question for you to ponder. The other difference is that the builders are wise or foolish, not based on site selection, but on effort. In Matthew, they choose the rock or the sand. In Luke, they choose to work hard by digging deep or to lazily plop their house on the surface without laying a proper foundation. So in addition to following where Jesus wants us to build, we also need to work hard. Jesus never said the gospel would be easy. We need to put in the effort to prepare and to execute. Preparing is to use our spiritual disciplines, like I have blogged about every Friday during Lent. And by the way, if you want to go back and look at those spiritual disciplines, which apply whether it's Lent or not, you can check them out on my website, CecilTaylorMinistries.com, and go to the free content section. You can look at the Facebook page for Cecil Taylor Ministries, or you can go on Medium.com and search for Cecil Taylor Ministries. So, preparing. We have tools like prayer, worship, fellowship, meditation, Bible study, Christian writers' studies, fasting, silence, and solitude at our disposal. Then we have to execute and put Jesus' commands into the daily fabric of our lives. It's fair to say that this thought process should guide us with the entirety of the Sermon on the Mount and the entirety of the Himalayas of the New Testament, taking this wisdom and insight in putting it all into practice. Now, during the Himalayas of the New Testament season, we, of course, through the introduction of the Gospel of John, Romans 8 and Romans 12, the entire book of Ephesians, key sections of Philippians 2 and 4, and the Sermon on the Mount as found in Matthew 5, 6, and 7. These are the Himalayas of the New Testament, the highest peaks of Christian thought. If you missed any podcasts or want to listen again to absorb them, please go back and listen to this season of podcasts that started in July of 2022. Well, before I tell you about my exciting season 3 coming up and some changes coming to my podcast for that series, I want to remind you of the services Cecil Taylor Ministry offers. I provide speaker services and a variation of that, my retreat services. With speaker services, I can either come to your church or small group or visit virtually. I can teach or speak out of my common range of topics, or I can cook up a special topic for you at your request. And I love to go and speak with a live audience. It's really what I do best. Retreat services are one instance of speaker services. I can come visit your retreat and provide one or multiple messages. I also have the capabilities to help organize your retreat. So depending on what you need, perhaps there's more I can provide in terms of logistics. Please let me know by emailing me at the following address, Cecil@CecilTaylorMinistries.com. Now, let me preview the next podcast series. Season 3 is called The Top 11 Themes of Jesus. I went through and counted up the number of separate instances in the Bible where Jesus talked about various topics. My results are sorted by volume, the number of times Jesus talked about a topic. 11 themes stood out from the rest, so I will take the better part of a year to walk through those themes one per month. In this series, I'll share scripture selections and sub-themes of each theme to give us a clearer picture of what Jesus said to us. In addition, I'll have something new. I will bring a guest each time to speak on that topic in the second half of the podcast. At least that's my plan, and I'm trying to line up all those guests now, and I do have some great guests who have committed, so I'm really eager to interview them and to share this intriguing material with you. Watch for the first podcast in the new series to drop sometime in early May. Until then, may you experience God's blessings as Easter people, putting your faith into practice 7 days a week. See you next time.